Okay, well, welcome everyone. Thanks for coming along today to hear our announcement about Herceptin. Sitting at the top table here, I have Dr. Dilke Rosiah from Pharmac, who's the Deputy Medical Director, and David Mates, who's the Chief Executive of Wairarapa DHB, and he is the spokesman for District Health Boards on this particular issue. So I'll just hand it over to Dilke.
Thanks. Thank you all for coming to attend this media conference. As you know, Pharmac and District Health Boards have been assessing the question of whether to fund Herceptin for early-stage breast cancer. The first step in this process, since provisional registration by MedSafe, was to seek the view of the Cancer Treatment Subcommittee of PTAC. The committee gave Herceptin a low to medium priority for funding. Previously, it has given a high priority recommendation to drugs such as Gleevec for leukemia, MabThera for lymphoma, and taxanes for breast cancer, all of which have been since funded. The Cancer Treatment Committee's recommendation and comments were presented to the main expert clinical committee, PTAC, in May this year. In addition to the information provided to the Cancer Committee, PTAC had data from the FinHER trial, a smaller scale trial which looked at the impact of a shorter course, a 9-week treatment with Herceptin, as well as information from the supplier. PTAC raised a number of concerns, which have also been echoed in overseas review documents. I will now describe some of the concerns. PTAC was unable to determine the size of treatment benefit on overall survival from the data produced. That is, we don't know whether this medicine saves lives. The evidence did not provide certainty over how Herceptin would be used in clinical practice. They were unable to determine the optimum dosing schedule and duration of treatment, how long it should be taken. They also highlighted the impact funding would have on other hospital services. PTAC decided in May that there was insufficient evidence to enable it to make a positive funding recommendation. It requested further information. At the same time, as PTAC was looking at the evidence, Pharmac was conducting an economic analysis and negotiating with the supplier. Again, uncertainties in the data caused difficulty. The cost of Herceptin remains an issue. At a cost of about $70,000 per patient per year and with additional treatment costs, this would be an investment for the district health boards of between $20 and $25 million per year. This compares with $35 to $45 million per year for all other hospital cancer medicines. This remains a significant challenge for district health boards, and David may touch on this later. However, I would like to emphasize that at this stage, our concern is with the available clinical evidence. Our view is that at this time, the data does not provide sufficient certainty of the long-term benefits of Herceptin or its impact on life expectancy to justify committing taxpayer funding to Herceptin. This is a difficult decision. I know that there will be people who will be disappointed to hear that Herceptin is not funded at this time. However, Pharmac is continuing to receive and review evidence that continues to emerge, and this will be an ongoing process. The first step will see further information provided going to the PTAC meeting in August. This ongoing flow of information is critical to deciding whether to commit funding to Herceptin.
Thanks, Dilke. The District Health Board strongly endorsed the Pharmac recommendation not to fund Herceptin at this stage. In endorsing the recommendation, District Health Boards note that PTAC has requested further information and that when this information becomes available, it will be assessed. But there is still uncertainty as to the treatment regime, Herceptin with chemotherapy, Herceptin following chemotherapy, for example. We're also very interested in the Finnish trial that has looked at a 9-week treatment cycle, and whilst a very small trial, there appears to be very similar outcomes to the other trials that have been undertaken. Cost continues to remain a significant concern for district health boards, and as Dilke touched on, the $20 to $25 million of costs is still a significant issue for us. I think it's also important to note that on top of the actual pharmaceutical costs, there are additional flow-on costs of approximately $6,000 to $8,000 per patient. And those costs are associated with the extra 3 to 4 echocardiograms that are required as part of a treatment cycle associated with Herceptin. The increased infusion times, and if we're looking at basically looking at 18 infusions of 90 minutes per infusion, actually has a significant flow-on impact to the way that resources are actually staffed within hospitals. And we're also noting that there is the potential to increase the waiting times for existing cancer patients and the adverse effect on cardiology services. So what, again, we're highlighting is that actually Herceptin itself, while cost is a significant issue, there are some other resources that, in fact, we're, again, assessing and looking at as a DHB sector. Again, in summary, as further information becomes available through the PharmAct process, that will be assessed, and further updates or further recommendations will then come through to district health boards relative to funding. So with that, I guess we're opening up the conference now for any further questions.
To what extent is this the start of a thinning of the wedge for a flow of very expensive medications that are coming on stream now? And is this an experience you're going to have to go through repeatedly at frequent intervals?
This, I guess, is a good example of some of the very high-cost medicines that we're starting to see in our assessment at PharmAct. Not that many years ago, a medicine at $20,000 to $30,000 per year we used to consider expensive. Now we're looking at the $70,000 up to $100,000 per year. And the question we have to ask is why that cost?
There's another drug just been developed overseas called Tycurb. It attacks the same protein as Herceptin. It's proved so effective in trials that the trials were stopped and the women in the trials were immediately given the drug. The company manufacturing it is looking at rolling that out around the world. Has there been any approach to introduce that in New Zealand?
We'll need to wait for that medicine to go through the registration process, and like all of the medicines, it'll be a case of the supplier applying and an assessment taking place.
Are you aware of any approach to New Zealand regulatory authorities to have that medicine made available in New Zealand?
We're certainly aware of the drug.
Are you aware of any approach to New Zealand regulatory authorities to have the medicine made available in New Zealand?
I won't comment on that, as I'm not certain of my facts. As I said, we certainly are aware of it.
Why do you think Australia and Britain, they've both agreed, even though it's been appealed in Britain, that they've agreed to fund it? Why do you believe their information, or your information obviously isn't as good as theirs if they've decided to go ahead?
Both the UK and Australia aren't funding yet. It's correct.
They're going to.
In the UK, as you've indicated, there is a draft recommendation from its assessment agency to fund, and as you said, that has been appealed, and we'll certainly wait to see more information about the appeal and what it means. What we particularly note when comparing the United Kingdom with New Zealand is the assessment agency in the UK does not have to consider ongoing practical considerations to the healthcare system. It does not need to consider budget. It does not need to consider what it'll mean to other health services. They're able to make their recommendation and then leave the primary care trust to take it from there in terms of funding.
This is really all about money, isn't it?
This is first and foremost about insufficient data.
Well, has PharmAct taken into account the 23-month data from the HERA trial that was presented at the ASCO meeting in June?
That data has not been considered yet by the Clinical Committee, PTAC. You'll remember that PTAC last met in May. Prior to that data coming out, they will certainly see that data plus some other bits and pieces of information when they meet in August.
So is this effectively a no from PharmAct, given all the uncertainties, or do you just see this as a no decision yet?
This is a no at this time. We need to keep assessing and watching for more information. The biggest trial in this area has only produced interim data so far. The data is coming out, it seems, almost month by month, and as already described, there's some more new data since PTAC last met. So it is a very fluid situation in terms of the clinical evidence at the moment.
Is it fair to say that your main lack of data lies in how long people, or how many people, survive beyond the 1-year horizon in treatment?
the primary issue with the lack of data is just that the data hasn't come out, and that they've had the 1 year interim data and waiting for, and it appears that in some forms the 23 month data has now presented. It's due with the fact that the main trial is still ongoing and the data is being produced all the time.
Can you just sum up for me why do you think Britain and Australia clearly have better data than we've got?
Right. With UK, their assessment, it's interesting actually that the report out of Sheffield, the SHAR report that the assessment agency made their recommendation on, actually identifies most, if not all, the same sort of concerns that PTAC and PharmAC have made around benefits, around risks, around costs. However, their assessment agency is able to make a call with no thought towards the practical implications of the rest of the health services.
So that's when it gets back to money. So other health services have to suffer if you're going to fund this.
Yes. But both those countries are now faced with the issue of how to fund it.
So has this decision been made solely on the basis of not enough data, or how much has money been a factor?
First and foremost, this is about not enough data. We do not have a positive recommendation from the clinical experts. The PharmAC's usual assessment process involves getting a recommendation from the clinical experts first. We don't have that yet. They want more data.
So what do you say to all those women that turned up at Parliament saying that this drug would save their lives? What do you say to them?
Anyone with such a serious condition obviously will want any medicine that they think might work for them. PharmAC has to look at the evidence. We have to make sure that the medicine works, but more importantly, how well does it work? That is the question we need to address, because we have to look at a whole group of medicines. It is medicines for breast cancer, it's medicines for other cancers, it's medicines for heart disease and so on. We have to assess all these medicines in the same way, look at the clinical data first.
But has the money been anything to do with the decision at all?
First and foremost, it is about the data.
That doesn't ring true because
no,
you just identified the British and the Australian thing, and you've said it's about money, and this clearly is about money and other services suffering as a result.
Well, no, it's not, because at this.
Well, you just said it was.
Well, at this stage, the clinical committees that are assessing that have raised some serious concerns and are essentially asking for further information. As it becomes available, that may change the recommendation coming through. So it would be inappropriate for us to fund something that is actually, through the clinical processes, has raised some serious concerns and questions that need to be followed up on. The second bit is, in terms of what is the level of funding, is going to be very dependent on the sort of treatment cycles that are there. So the Finnish trial that has been undertaken certainly is a lot more cost-effective than the longer treatment cycle, for instance. So there are some quite significant issues that need to be resolved before we can actually say what is the actual level of funding that we're talking about. And that's where we need to have the clinical processes continuing to go through and assess the available data as it comes through.
So we still don't know whether it's available in June that we mentioned that you haven't actually taken into account, because you're saying that the data was examined back in April by CAPHOP and they have not yet looked at the new data that became available in June, whereas both the UK and Australia have. So would you say that our process is not as responsive as those in those other two countries?
PTAC met in May and it meets every 3 months, so the next meeting is in August. It is to do with, I guess, timing, that the Australian body met after that information came out, after PTAC had met in May, and so we can assume, possibly, that they had that information. What we will make sure is that information plus other data, including we have made approaches to the investigators of two of the trials and asked for data more directly and asked for some more explanation, and anything like that that we can provide, that anything that gives a greater picture of the clinical situation, will go to the expert committee.
What level of robust scientific data would be required by PTAC? Would 23 months of data which showed a discernible benefit be sufficient, or would they require 36 months or 4 years?
We'll have to ask PTAC. They will need to see the information and make the call. I will point out that the 23-month data is currently only in slides. It is not in a peer-reviewed journal. We expect that to be published later in the year. But certainly we will give that information to the committee.
And will 23 months published in a peer-reviewed journal be sufficient if it showed a benefit?
PTAC are an independent clinical committee. They need to make the call and give us a recommendation on the data.
But you take recommendations from PTAC all the time on the basis of your experience with them. What level of experience in terms of clinical trials do they look for to say that a drug is worth funding? 12 months, 24 months, 3 years?
I think the ideal would be very good quality data for the longest term possible that we can access, but they need to look at the data that's provided to them and make a call.
So what hope can you give these women that say that this is their life-saving drug?
That we will continue to review it, that we are being very proactive and active in this. As I said, we've made approaches to the Finnish and the US investigators and are in discussion with certainly the Finnish investigators. We are doing our utmost to get as much data as we can, as quickly as we can.
Is there an element in this of people who have the disease or have relatives with the disease tending to clutch at straws without much regard for the scientific evidence?
I think anyone with a serious illness will see a medicine that has a chance or has some impact as something they want to try. We come back to the pharmac needs to look at all the evidence in the way we do for all medicines we assess and then make a call on whether to recommend funding or not.
Do you have any concern that drug companies are using a form of viral marketing to essentially hype up the purported effects of their drugs and place pressure on agencies such as yours to fund those drugs?
Well, it's interesting that the interim results from the HERA study and the Ramon work are so well known and so well publicised.
Why do you
think oncologists around the world are already prescribing Herceptin and many governments are also providing it for patients if there isn't enough data to justify that? Presumably oncologists know better than anyone what works and what doesn't and what is of value.
We have asked the oncologists on CAPSOP, the Cancer Treatment Subcommittee, and yes, it is true that they've made a positive recommendation, but they've given it a low to moderate priority. In comparing that to other medicines that they have given a high priority to, and I mentioned them earlier.
Is it true that some of the oncologists on CAPSOP are prescribing this drug for their patients in their own private practices?
I can't comment, sorry.
Can I just ask who's asking the questions? If you're on the phone, can you please identify yourselves?
This is Libby Burgess from the Breast Cancer Advocacy Coalition, just trying to clarify some points.
So could you just sum up, please, exactly what you've done about obtaining more information from researchers overseas?
Right. We've contacted two groups. They're the investigators who were involved in the initial FinHER study. They are looking at the next step, at comparing the 9-week treatment course with the 12-month course. And so we basically expressed interest in being kept up to date and potentially being involved. Part of that, as we've indicated in our press release, may well involve talking to New Zealand oncologists, whether there's a possibility of New Zealand being involved in a trial such as that. The other group of investigators we've been in contact with are those who are describing the Ramon paper, where two trials were pooled together, and the expert clinical committee would ideally like to see some of the background data, not the final pooled results, to get a better feel for what the data is saying. And we're certainly trying to make approaches there to get some more data.
Could you just discuss what you've written here about 2-year follow-up data from the HERA trial, just sort of sum up why that's good?
Right. That's the data. There were a number of three arms to the HERA trial. There was a 1-year treatment arm, and we have the interim results from the 1-year treatment arm after 1 year. what is now out in slides but yet to be peer-reviewed and checked and published is 2 years on from the one-year treatment. What is the impact of having 1 year of Herceptin 2 years on? What's the impact on your relapses? Does it have an impact on your survival?
So will you be looking at that later this year?
Certainly the slides from that present that information will go to PTAC in August. The ideal would be to see the full article, the full data presented after it's been peer-reviewed, but certainly the slides will go to PTAC.
Can I just ask you, you referred to your oncologists and your subcommittee, and they were positive about Herceptin. What did they say? There were other drugs that were higher priority and general cancer?
High priority in terms of the evidence, high priority in terms of the practical issues around other services, high priorities in terms of the cost. Those are the sorts of issues the subcommittee need to consider when they make those sort of priority ratings.
So they get back to what you were relating to earlier, that if this drug is funded, then other oncology treatment may go by the wayside. That's what they're saying. So again, it comes back to money.
Well, it comes back to looking at a whole range of treatments
and
making the most appropriate decisions.
It comes back to money.
Well, that's one aspect of it. The other bit is actually, again, coming back to Herceptin, is looking at the clinical evidence. And at this stage, there is still some further clinical information that's required to actually make a firm recommendation.
It's about sufficient data for the investment to be justified. It's about you have to have strong evidence. You need to be reasonably certain this medicine works in the way you want it to work to justify the considerable cost, given that there will be flow-on effects, that there are other medicines and health services that may not be able to be funded.
So do your oncologists feel the same way, that there's insufficient data?
They did give it a positive recommendation. But there was obviously some caution around it, and certainly they talked a lot about the other services, and you will get, I don't know if it's in the pack, but they're the full minutes from that meeting in April.
There's going to be people out there that are going to say, you're hiding behind not enough data because of the cost. What do you say to them?
That it is about the data, first and foremost. The PharmAc processes involve firstly getting a recommendation for any new chemical, a recommendation, be it diabetes, cancer, heart disease, so on, from the clinical experts about what is the gain, what's the size of the gain, and other issues, other clinical issues, and as we said, to do with dosing and so on. That is the first significant step in the assessment process, and it has to be completed. We do need a positive recommendation to go to the next step.
If we get to the point where you do fund subsidies for the stroke, what happens, and you still are working out of a similar pool of money that you have presently for anti-cancer treatments, what happens when the next novel medication comes along? Do you need to find another $50 or $60 or $70 million?
That's one of the challenges we have, is again making sure that the right processes have been gone through to make to look at the return on investment, and looking at other health priorities to say, is that the best place or is that the best area to put additional funding into.
Does that not actually suggest this is a matter requiring political intervention to raise the pool of money which is available for spending?
Well, I think the issue that faces health at any time is looking at how do we make the best and most appropriate decisions relative to any services that are provided. And that goes through to how much do we put into mental health services relative to primary care, relative to additional hip replacements, relative to pharmaceutical treatments. So again, those are all the balancing acts that we're needing to look at. And that's, irrespective of, basically given the size of the health spend, Those are the decisions that we continue to need to look at.
Sorry, just one last question on the cost thing. How does a drug company like Roche get away with charging such an exorbitant price for something if the data's not there?
Well, that's a question you probably need to throw back to Roche. But it's also part of the reason why the cost of Herceptin is a significant issue for us. It is a very, very high cost treatment.
Without backup data?
Well, the backup data becomes even more critical because with that size of investment, we need to be absolutely on solid ground that it's going to give us the health gains or health improvements that we're looking for.
Dr. Rosiah spoke of three arms to the HERA trial. We talked about two. Is there a third arm which involves longer-term administering medicine over a longer term?
My understanding that was about standard treatment, the comparator.
Are we happy? Any more questions from the phone?
It's Marlene Ditchfield speaking from the Wairarapa Times Age. We have a woman in Masterton who has been frantically trying to fundraise, as are several other around the country. Do you have any figures on how many women we are actually talking about in New Zealand that are affected today by today's announcement?
We estimate that there would be about 300 plus women who, if Perceptin was funded, would fit the criteria.
Do you know how many of these women actually are having Herceptin treatment funded privately at the moment?
I don't know.
No. Thank you. That 300, is that an accumulated total, or would you expect if there's going to be 300 relevant cases each year on average?
That's correct. And we'd expect that to increase also because often in the first year it's a bit slow in terms of just getting started.
But it's an aggressive cancer, so they don't actually last much longer than the first year anyway.
I don't think I'll comment on that. Yes, I can't comment on the impact of the progression of the disease on the patient numbers.
Okay, thank you all very much.